Welcome to Passion and Purpose with Pamela, celebrating all things woman. I'm Dr. Pamela Hardy Shepherd, here to ignite inspiration through conversations that spotlight women's power and their journeys. Let's share our light, our stories, and create a space of celebration for every woman. Here's to embracing our womanhood together.
Welcome to Passion and Purpose with Pamela. For those who missed Carolyn Scott on our last podcast, I am thrilled to reintroduce this exceptional leader whose dedication to transforming healthcare and advocating for the medically vulnerable is truly inspiring. This is a conversation you don't want to miss. Let's give a warm welcome again to Carolyn Scott.
Reintroduce yourself to the audience.
Sure. Hi, Pamela. So again, my name is Carolyn Scott, and I come to you after spending about 30 years in healthcare. I started off in hospital administration. Eventually, I began working directly for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, where I had on several roles. I worked as a policy analyst. I had oversight for managed care organizations. I wrote and developed policy for Medicare and Medicaid. And if you haven't had a chance yet to look at the previous video that I did, I would encourage you to go back and take a look at that, because today is just, we're going to zone in on a little bit more of what we were talking about in that presentation. The first presentation was just a helicopter view, a broad overview of how the United States deliver healthcare to all of its citizens, ranging from like Veterans Administrative coverage, Medicare, Medicaid, all the way to private insurance and how private insurance is connected to our jobs. So again, that's the foundation of what we're going to talk about today, which specifically is Medicaid. So we're going to start with that today. So how does that sound?
Sounds great. Let's get to it.
All right. So just to level set a bit and make sure that we're all on the same page, we're going to talk about the basics of Medicaid, and then we're going to bring it all the way to today and the things that we're hearing in the news under our current administration and what the potential impact could be on the Medicaid program. So just to kind of start from the beginning with Medicaid, Medicaid was part of President Lyndon B. Johnson's New Deal in 1965. So in my last video, I mentioned that's when Medicare was developed. It's also when Medicaid was developed. And very often in the media, especially now, we hear a lot about Medicare and Medicaid. Sometimes that can be confusing. They sound very similar, but they are very different programs. They both were started in 1965, but the intent was to serve different populations and serve their health care. So just a quick reminder, Medicare is for individuals primarily who are age 65 and older. You can also get Medicaid with certain disabilities. They're very specific disabilities. For example, if you have end-stage renal disease or kidney disease and you are dependent on dialysis, that potentially could make you eligible for Medicare, and you don't even have to be 65 yet. So there is a population who are under 65. Lou Gehrig's disease is another one that in many instances you could qualify for Medicare. So that's Medicare. So care, we're caring for our seniors and disabled primarily. Medicaid is primarily for pregnant women, children under a certain federal income level. Medicaid also has some minimum standard requirements that come from the federal government. Pregnant women under a certain income level, children under a certain income level, certain disabilities. If you're blind, that could also be a basic eligibility requirement for Medicaid. With Medicare, the one for the aged, more senior people and disabled, certain disabled populations, such as the kidney disease and Lou Gehrig's disease, that's ran by the federal government. So when you see Medicare in California, you see Medicare in Florida. They're identical. The federal government administers that. There's one exception, though, and this is something that's more new. Now, private health insurance plans can contract with Medicare, and they all have to offer the same thing. I mentioned Medicare in California, Medicare in Utah needs to look the same with some basic things. With the managed care organizations, they have to provide those basic things, but with their contract with the government, they have the option to expand beyond the basics of what Medicare offer. You still have a monthly premium and things like that with the Medicare Advantage plan or managed care organization. They're often referred to as Medicare Advantage. But generally speaking, Medicare is ran by the federal government, and the basic coverage and out-of-pocket costs are all the same for all 50 states
Can I interject
and U.S.
something here? I
territories. Yes.
know you're on a roll. I want to interject and say, and Medicare is something that people who have worked have paid into a system. And if you can just say that, then I'll be like happy.
Absolutely. So both are paid for by federal dollars, Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare, however, as an individual, you are paying in for yourself, literally. If you look at your federal income tax on your pay stub, you'll see a line item for Medicare that is specifically the government taking part of your income to help fund you when you're no longer working and fund your health care. There are still out-of-pocket costs for Medicare, but it does cover a big chunk of your health care costs. Again, that's something you are paying for directly into the government. Medicaid is also a federally funded program as well. However, it go when ta federal taxes are taken from us as individuals, it goes into a bigger pool that's to provide a safety net for our more medically vulnerable and low-income vulnerable populations. So yes, both are federally funded, but the way the dollars are assigned is a little bit different. So, back to Medicaid. So, as I mentioned, that states have a minimum set of requirements they have to meet that's set by the federal government. However, states have a lot of autonomy once they meet those minimum requirements. Pregnant women, children with no insurance, someone who's blind. So, a certain percentage of the federal poverty level is the income minimum requirement. States can increase that. They can't go below it, but they can increase that if they want to. And some states who have a higher cost of living do increase what the minimum federal requirement is. So, Medicare is more considered a government-ran program. Medicaid is seen as a state-federal partnership, because the government gives a block of money to each state based on whatever numbers they crunch the population. There's a lot of acuity levels. There's a lot of things that go into the formula to determine how much each state gets for Medicaid. And then once that money is sent to that state, they determine what their program will look like. And that brings us to Medicaid expansion. So we hear that in the news a lot. Like, why didn't my state expand Medicaid, or my state did? Medicaid expansion allows states even more autonomy to expand the number of people who are qualified for Medicaid. So I mentioned the basic requirements are pregnant women under a certain income level, children, blind, and some other disabled populations. You notice I did not mention single men or single women who don't have any children. Prior to the Affordable Care Act, what some people refer affectionately call Obamacare, prior to that, that's a population that did not receive any Medicaid coverage. If you were a single adult under 65 and you did not have any dependents, it didn't matter whether or not you had health insurance, you didn't qualify for it. Under the Affordable Care Act and under I'll use it interchangeably, Affordable Care Act, ACA, or Obamacare. Under those provisions that were signed, it gave states the opportunity to expand even more. And that in some states did include single adults who were in transition, maybe lost a job temporarily or new to a state or something like that. And the way the expansion works is that when starting in 2020, the federal government was going to pay for 100% of whatever the cost was to expand Medicaid. So it would not be an additional cost to the state at all, up for 5 to 5 years. And then at 2025, it would go down to 95%. So the states will be responsible for paying 5% of those extra costs for that expansion. And the federal government, into perpetuity, and unless Congress changed things, would pay 95% of those costs. Right now, as of, I believe, February of 2025, think it's about 41 states have expanded their Medicaid coverage, and it's slowly starting to add. I think North Carolina is one of the most recent ones that have expanded, which means there's just more people who might be in a position where they just don't have health insurance, their jobs don't provide it, they had to go part-time to be a caregiver. There's a million reasons why an adult might not have health insurance for a moment in time. And so the Medicaid expansion helped to provide a safety net for those individuals. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we get into our current administration and some of the proposed changes to Medicaid and some of those cuts, because Medicaid expansion has a potential to be impacted as well. And there's about nine states that have not expanded Medicaid. Many of them are in the Southeast. So there's Florida, Mississippi, I believe is one. So many of them are in the Southeast that have chosen not to expand at this point. Did you have any questions of what I shared so
Oh no,
far?
this is great because you are making it where anybody can understand. And thank you for that. So no, I have no questions at this time.
And so I mentioned, another part of the Medicaid program you might hear about is called CHIP, CHIP. It's called the Children's Health Insurance Program. It's under a special provision under Medicaid. And what that does is it provides health insurance for children in families where maybe the parents work, but they don't receive health insurance from their job. That's not part of the agreement with their job. That's where CHIP kicks in, so that child will be able to get health insurance if they meet the minimums, the parents meet the minimum standards, will be able to get health insurance under the CHIP program, which is sometimes Medicaid and CHIP is used interchangeably, but CHIP funds are separate than Medicaid funds. And so you might hear the distinction between the two. And again, that's for children whose parents work but just don't have health insurance. Another law that was recently passed that I think is good to note is as of January of 2024, a child that is approved for Medicaid will automatically receive 12-month continuous coverage no matter what. Because there are times where, let's say Michael Jr., he's 8 years old, his whole family might qualify for Medicaid because his parents lost their job or something like that. So on March 1st, he's eligible. If the parents get a job 6 months later where they have health insurance, that's fine. But now there's a federal mandate that a child cannot lose their Medicaid within a 12 month. They must have 12 months of continuous care
That's
once
good.
they become eligible, in spite of extenuating circumstances. Because as you can imagine, before that, parents might get a job, they have health insurance, and the children were going in and out. It was just causing a lot of confusion. So it's my hope that that will remain. We don't know if that will remain or not, but it's my hope. That was, I think, a positive change for everyone involved. It's really hard to track children that are going in and out of Medicaid. They tend to use healthcare a lot more. They get colds, ear infections, and determining who's going to pay all of the administrative costs and that, it just makes more sense to ensure that there's uninterrupted coverage for at least 12 months. So that's in place now.
I love that. And because it actually, when you go in and out, it actually costs more. It costs more. So whoever thought of that, and I remember the CHIP program distinctly because I was also housed with them at the County of San Diego, and they were up under the maternal child health umbrella. And so we were all in the same little quadrant. But does CHIP also take care of dental?
It depends on the
I'm
state.
on
Some
the
states
state.
do.
Okay. All right.
That and eyeglasses and eye, yeah. Prescriptions,
Okay.
yeah.
Awesome.
Hearing aids, those if a child needs a hearing aid, those kind of things. Yeah, they do cover some of those things. And I believe under CHIP, more so than under Medicaid, you can get dental coverage. There are some Medicaid plans, and we'll talk about that as well, who will cover dental, but I think it's more common under the CHIP program. So for a person who receives Medicaid, the way that it is provided to the individual. There's two ways. One is, you go to the state and they make a determination that you're eligible, you apply for Medicaid. It's the fee-for-service model where they might just give you a card and then you have to search for a doctor that's willing to take Medicaid. But what's happening more commonly now is the Medicaid managed care model. And so what that is similar to what I described in Medicare with Medicare Advantage, where these private health insurers contract with the federal government. In the case of Medicaid, more states are leaning towards the managed care model of Medicaid, where the private health insurance companies, the Blue Cross Blue Shields, the Aetnas, they contract directly with the state to
Yes.
provide health insurance for the Medicaid beneficiaries. And it's the concept or the belief is that it makes it easier for everyone involved. One, as a Medicaid beneficiary, you won't have to call doctors and see and hope that they'll take Medicaid, beneficiaries if this health plan is already contracted with the state and that doctor is also contracted with that health plan, they have to see you. And so that takes out the burden of finding someone that takes Medicaid. Also, the belief is that with managed care organizations, you'll be assigned a primary care doctor who's going to know everything about your health care. A large percentage of Medicaid beneficiaries are children. Children have to get their well baby care checked. They break their arms. They see doctors generally a lot more than adults too, for just daily things that happen, as a child. So you're going to see the doctor more frequently. So the assumption is with a primary care doctor, they're going to know your child. They know, that they scraped their arm 2 years ago. So they will make a determination. They'll do all the primary care for that patient and for you if you're receiving Medicaid as well as the parent. And they'll know everything about you and they're taking more of a holistic approach. Should there be a need to refer you for a specialist, then they will make that determination and refer you. And so it also makes it an easier administrative burden where all of your claims are going through one organization,
Yes.
not, different individual doctors. So that is more states are headed that way, where Medicaid is leaving more of that what we call fee-for-service model, where you find someone who's willing to take you wherever you can, to more of a managed care model where it's clear who your providers are. You don't have to do a lot of calling or administrative burden. It's all covered under one umbrella.
I love that. I do.
Some interesting statistics about Medicaid that a lot of people might not be aware of is almost 50% of all births in the United States is covered by Medicaid, almost 50%. And some individual states, that's even higher. For example, in Mississippi, it's about 70% of births are covered under Medicaid. But if you think about women who are of childbearing age, that's usually, I think, 15 to 44. Women have children younger, earlier, typically. You haven't really developed your career yet. You're, still in college. So you don't have a huge income. And so logically, if you think about it, it actually does make sense that Medicaid would be the cover of a lot of the births simply because younger women of childbearing age who tend to be, when I say younger, mid-20s, younger, haven't put themselves in a position yet to be able to have, stable health insurance or anything like that. So, and as I mentioned, like I said, in some states it's upward to like 70%. I think Louisiana, I
Wow.
think is close. I think Alabama, they all have really high percentage of births that are covered by Medicaid. So, and when we start talking about the potential of these cuts, keep that in mind. Another population that uses Medicaid to provide for their care are long-term care facilities, upwards of 50%, and in some instances, it could be 80% of that facility is paid for by Medicaid. And I mentioned in my in our last talk, the one I hope people go back and watch, that Medicare, people are 65 and older, that part of the health insurance, Medicare, does not cover long-term care. And so many people do not find that out until the day they need it. It's
Need
usually children who have made a determination that their parents can no longer function on their own, and they start researching and looking for, assisted living facilities or these long-term care facilities that they find out for the first time Medicare is not going to cover that.
No.
Medicaid will, but You have to be below an income level. You can't own a house.
No.
I don't even know if you can own a car. If you can, it has to be really old. Your income, you really have to be destitute to qualify for Medicaid to cover your long-term care coverage. The
And
other thing,
you said something last time is like when they go back.
it's
So
called a look
this
back.
all, yeah, okay.
Medicaid goes back. The last time I checked, it was 24 months. But it changes each year. Regulatory changes happen. So don't quote me on how long they look back. But they look back. It's years. They
Yes.
go back years because they're going to look at your bank account. They're going to go to the bank. Well, Wells Fargo. I'll just name a national one. Wells Bank America, the one that everybody knows. Jane Doe is 67 and can't take care of herself anymore. She wants Medicaid, but we need to know what her bank account looked for the last X number of years. That bank, by federal law, is required to show them. So they're going to see if your child pulled out $30,000 3 years ago. They're going to see that, and they're going to like, well, that where's that $30,000? Until you can account for that $30,000, you're not eligible. And I do want to mention, though, what Medicare does cover is skilled nursing facility. People often confuse skilled nursing facilities and long-term care facilities. Two totally different, I was going to say animals. Maybe I hope that's not inappropriate. Two totally different animals. Skilled nursing facilities, often called SNFs for short, that is, you go in there and the expectation is that you're able to be rehabbed and go back to doing your own activities of daily living. So the assumption is, oh, I had a knee replacement. I'm going to need help to learn to walk properly and use my orthopedic shoes or whatever. Medicare thinks that'll take about 90 days. So they'll, and the duration can vary. So I'm not using 90 days as a regulatory agreement. I don't know what it is, but let's say they assume it's going to take 90 days after the knee replacement where you can walk without safely on a walker. They might come to your home and make sure the rugs are out the way, that kind of stuff. So Medicare will pay for a skilled nursing facility because the assumption is that you're just going through rehabilitation and eventually you'll be able to drive and do whatever it is to take care of yourself. Long-term care is just that, long-term care, which is there really isn't the belief that you're going to be able to take care of your ADL activities of daily living on your own for the foreseeable future. Medicare don't cover that.
It's mind-boggling.
One thing I will say, if we got some young people, when I say young, I'll be generous and say 50 and under, go get you some long-term care insurance.
Yes,
And
and
I'm
it's
more talking to
cheaper.
myself than anybody. Go get you some long-term because it's going to be a way cheaper now.
Yes.
$50 a month might sound like a lot.
It's
It ain't.
nothing.
But once you hit that 50-ish, I'd say 40, mid-40s, you're going to be paying hundreds a
It's
month. And that's
hundreds.
still going to be a deal. So even if
That's
you
right.
over that age and you're paying 150, still go get it. That's
I
still a
love it.
deal.
Yes.
Because at some point, all of us, I mean, of course, we have the lucky, 105-year-old that still drive race cars and run in the Olympics,
Don't
right?
know any of them.
Right. I see, yeah,
I know
definitely
they're out
in
there.
heroes. Yeah. So, but at some point, chances are we're going to need to rely on someone outside of ourselves to help us with some of the basics. And shoot, the way technology is changing, where cash is gone, if you don't even know how to do banking on your phone,
Oh my
you're
God.
already dealing with issues there. So I use that example to say it's probably not unlikely at some point you're just not going to be able to function just because the world has moved so fast. Even if you're all together, let's say we do go to non-driving cars. I just passed a couple of them earlier this week. I don't know how to use those things, and I'm not even at that age just yet. So I'm just giving examples. Long-term care just isn't, oh, if I have dementia or anything like that. It's just activities of daily living. Go get some long-term care insurance. Just
Yes.
do it. The younger, the better. It's worth the investment. And 30 years from now, you're gonna thank. I'm so glad that girl, I don't remember her name. I'm
Yes.
so that lady told me that. But that's my soapbox for the
I
day.
love it. No, I love the soapbox because trust me, once we got to a certain age, we were saying to get it, and it was hundreds. And we weren't even past 65 yet. And it was hundreds of dollars.
So Because the reason is they know if we look at life and how lives, progress, they know the likelihood of you needing it is there, and it's sooner than later.
That's
But
right.
if you're 37, 28, and you're paying into it now, that $50 a month, trust me, you're going to be so glad and grateful that you did it. And who knows? I mean, one thing I want to mention before we start talking about what's going on in the news and in our administration and our culture today as it relates to Medicaid specifically, for individuals who are interested in determining whether or not they qualify for Medicaid or any kind of support for health insurance, there's two primary ways to apply. You can go to healthcare.gov. One word, healthcare.gov. Make sure you're on that website because there's so many other companies in health insurance that use similar names, or they might try and redirect you because they really want to sell you insurance. Make sure you are on a federal website before you start putting information in and, putting all that out there, because you want to avoid any background noise. You want to go directly to the government, and they're going to ask you information about your income and your current insurance status and things like that. If you qualify for Medicaid, it might redirect you to the state website or let you know you might be eligible. Click here. And if you're not eligible, it will let you know what kind of marketplace plans. And marketplace is under Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, where, as I said in my last video, where your health insurance tend to be tied to your job. If for some reason you've lost employer-sponsored health insurance, you could go to this healthcare.gov website, key in your information. If you are not eligible for Medicaid, it will let you know what health plans that you can buy on your own. I will say, in my experience, they're not, that cheap. The goal was for eventually for that cost to go down, and hopefully, in our administration, at some point now or in the near future, that will happen. That was part of the original Affordable Care Act, was where the government would kick in, so you wouldn't have to pay over a certain dollar amount. Hopefully, that'll come back at some point, but. Again, healthcare.gov. The other way with Medicaid is go directly to your state's website. So if you're in the state of Rhode Island, Google State of Rhode Island Medicaid application. Again, make sure you're on the state that you're in on their website, putting in that information, because there's a lot of businesses who want your business and health insurance companies who want your business that have found a way to be at the top of the list. So really pay close attention that you're on the actual state government website.
Great advice, great advice.
So with that, I wanted to talk a little about a bit about what we've been hearing in the news, but before I change gears, I just want to check in with you, Pamela, to see if
You
you have
know what?
questions.
This is not so much as questions because you are very, very comprehensive. It is just so much that people really do not know. And who has really sat down and talked to us about this? We think that's over there and that's over there. And one of the things that she said that was so powerful last time about not wait, about Medicare, we're talking about Medicaid, but I know people who were on Medicare and over the years, they had to spend down their money because they could no longer take care of themselves. And it happens. And these people were huge earners. We don't know what the future holds for us. We have no clue. And I think in saying that, we don't know what the future holds for our services today. So that's all I needed to say. It's a little daunting. And if you're feeling what I'm feeling, it's a little daunting because being in the unknown, especially when you follow the rules and you do what you're supposed to do, you work, you take this money out, you do this, you save, you do all these things. And then it's like, you don't know.
Right.
So that's where I am right now.
Yes, and I think I just want to kind of reiterate that. One, there's a couple of things. One, you mentioned a term, spend down. That is an official term. When you're looking for Medicaid eligibility and where you see it the most is people who are looking for long-term care coverage. You're going to start hearing things from Medicaid about spend downs and look back studies and all that. What spend down is what I was saying earlier, where, once you find out, oh, we're not eligible, my mom has too much in savings, and they're going to say, you got to spend down to this dollar amount if you want to become eligible for Medicaid. And a lot of us have followed what we were taught as the golden rule, where you go, you get a good job, you get your benefits, you save in your 401k. And let's not talk about that today. I don't, in the
Oh.
future, people won't know, but now is not a good time. We're in 2025, where we are today. Our 401ks are not looking good at all. But we did all those things, and those things make us ineligible for Medicaid and some of these programs that I've just shared with you, but it's definitely not enough for you to be able to pay for these things out of pocket. So you find yourself in this gap, in this place of trying to figure out what it is that I do. So back to my soapbox, what is that you do? At 28, you get long-term care insurance. That's what you do, So there are things, there's not doom and gloom. There's things that you can do, but the sooner you do them, the better. So that way you're not so reliant on federal systems and programs that are just, as we can see, many of us thought they will always be here, and hopefully they will be, but we don't know. And we need to just start thinking about what can I do as an individual to make myself as self-sufficient and self-solvent as possible. And it's easier said than done when we all live in this, capitalistic system, in the United States. But whatever we can do to have a eke out a little bit of a control over that, do it. And the sooner you can do it, the better. There's a couple of things I wanted to mention. We talked about Medicare and Medicaid, and they're two separate programs. There is also a population of people who qualify for both. They have received both Medicare and Medicaid. Typically, Medicare is a primary payer, and whatever Medicare doesn't cover, then Medicaid kicks in. There's very strict criteria that each state has to determine whether or not you're eligible for both. One example I mentioned earlier are long-term care residents. Many of them who are over 65 already have Medicare. As I mentioned, Medicare doesn't cover long-term care, so it'll cover their doctor's appointments if they have to be admitted to the hospital away from the long-term care facility. It covers that kind of stuff. If they have to go to a skilled nursing facility for rehab, it'll cover that. The long-term care facility itself is covered by Medicaid. So people who have both are considered dual eligibles. If you're interested, you can just go to your state to see what that eligibility looks like, because it varies state by state. The other thing I wanted to mention is that with Medicaid, there's also, if there's different aberrations or things that come up that's unexpected, Medicaid coverage could also be expanded. So an example is COVID-19. States did get extra funding to provide Medicaid to a bigger population. And they've now pulled back those COVID-19 funds from Medicaid. So there were people who had Medicaid starting in 2020. And I think the last of people who qualified under the COVID-19 relief was the end of 2024, I believe, who actually lost their coverage. I think they were about Oh, I think there might have been about 17 million or so people who qualified under the extra COVID-19 funding who have since lost their coverage because that extra funding went away. But that's an example of where you might find more people are eligible for Medicaid if something like that happens. As well. So back to what I've mentioned a couple of times. So as some of you might be aware, our current administration, the Trump administration, is proposing to cut about $880 billion from the Medicaid rolls. And the impact of that could be far-reaching. So I took some notes. That's why you see me looking down, because I didn't want to forget some of them. One is that chances are we'll cut back that expansion we talked about. I mentioned where more people with Medicaid expansion, not only could you expand Medicaid to single adults who don't have dependents, that's one of many expansions. Another one was income levels. You could have a higher income than before and qualify, because if you go to your state's website and you see what the income level is for like a family of four, it's unimaginable, like, that anyone could even exist on that. And so with Medicaid expansion, it increased that minimum dollar amount. So that could potentially go away. The estimate right now, well, right now, as of December 2024, about 74 million people receive Medicaid. So that's about 1 in 6 Americans receive Medicaid. And should these budget cuts go through, the estimation is about 20 million people or so are going to lose just based on the budget cuts. So we would go from 74 million to about 50 million or so people having Medicaid. Some of those are going to be those long-term care residents that we
Yes.
talked about. Some are going to be the single adults who are in transition or don't have dependents or disabled. They're probably going to lose their coverage. But you have to keep in mind, just because someone lose health care coverage doesn't mean those costs are going to go away. They're just going to pop up somewhere else.
Exactly.
So some of the out, not outcry, some of the impact of these cuts will be more sicker people showing up in the ER. Pregnant women who haven't received prenatal care potentially could show up in the ER. And then hospitals have to cover that cost because in many instances, hospitals are not supposed to, ERs are not supposed to turn you away, because you don't have health insurance, but it's expensive to care for you. So that
Right.
cost is going to go somewhere. So there's going to be that. I talked about the CHIP payments, which is funds for families who work full time, but just don't have health insurance or, and don't qualify for Medicaid. Their children right now can get health insurance under CHIP. That could potentially go away or be decreased significantly. Pam, I know, just talking, do you have any ideas or have thought about other impact that could happen?
I think when we look at the other programs, and I don't know if it's connected with the Department of Education, but you have children who have learning disabilities, and I think about that who may be on the spectrum or have hearing issues or sight issues. There are so many issues of people not getting what they need. And
Yes.
so when we look at, it's like anything else. I'm not sure in terms of what Medicaid, but I know with Medicare, before you can even get service, they have to approve it. And, so I don't know, maybe you want to speak to that. I really don't know what that is, but things
Yeah, I'm
that
glad
you
you
may
brought that
need.
up. So, so I mentioned both, this is true for both Medicare and Medicaid. I mentioned that the federal government has minimum requirements that of procedures that have to be covered. Well, baby coverage, immunizations, prenatal care, postpartum care up to 12 months, I believe. So if it falls under those federal requirements, then providers don't have to get what's called prior authorization or approval to provide this care to someone. But there might be a patient that comes in where it doesn't fall under those lists of predetermined coverage items. And if it doesn't fall under that, they have to go through what's called a prior authorization process where the doctors have to go through the health insurance companies and say, hey, this patient, I've determined they need XYZ. It's not on the list of minimum required procedures. Can we get your approval for this coverage? Some you have to give a long explanation as to why. And it depends on who's making the decision if it'll get approved and how quickly. There are some exceptions where they have to be approved in 24 hours. Emergency transportation, for example, if you have to fly a patient somewhere where the closest hospital that can provide the care they need is the next big city over, they will cover that in some instances, but it's still there's a timeline. It has to be within 24 hours if it's life-threatening, but it still has to go through that process. I know in the state of North Carolina, provider groups, physician groups have just like physician associations have just went to the state legislature in North Carolina to get rid of to say that health insurance companies should not be in the position to make a clinical determination about whether or not a procedure can be provided. And so I've been watching that. That was just presented, I think, last month. It's a very recent provision that was presented to the legislature in North Carolina, and I'm very curious to see how that turns out and the implications for that.
So let me ask you, and this is moving from that, but say, I'm not for sure, somebody who is on Medicaid and they need, they can no longer drive and they need services. Are there services that take them to like the cancer center or something like that? Are those things going to be impacted? Are
That, thank you for bringing that up. That's such a great question. So yes, with Medicaid, where we were headed, I'd say the last 8 years or so was looking beyond just doctor's visits as things that impact your health care significantly. Because right now, I mentioned, the federal government has like these minimum standards of things that have to be covered by Medicaid. Traditionally, they've been truly medical procedures and, different devices and things like that. And research is increasingly showing that there are other circumstances that have a direct impact on the health of individuals. Often it's referred to as the social determinants of health. Do I have access to fresh fruits? Do I have transportation to get to and from the doctor if I need to get, regular visits? Do I have company? Do I live alone and I don't have anyone to help me at all? So there's been a lot of research, and it's really exploding now on the impact of these what we call social determinants of health. You mentioned transportation. That is one thing that is covered. And I have to be honest, I'm not sure if it's a federal mandate or if this is something that states Medicaid programs decided that they wanted to expand. I'll have to research that. But transportation is covered in most states that provide Medicaid, if not all, but definitely most states. It does vary in what that transportation looks like. For example, in some states, if you can prove that it was that you need transportation related to your medical health, then you can get as many rides as you need covered by Medicaid. And it's pretty broad. It could be a trip to the grocery store to get a haircut or something like that, because that is part of your health ultimately. So some states are really broad like that. Some might limit the number that you can do, where you can only do 20 transports a month. And then after that, you have to go through that prior authorization where you have to get approval for more than that. So it varies state by state. There are a lot of demonstration programs in different states to look at these social determinants of health so they can look at them and focus on them and do some research to actually see if there's evidence in making a connection to how these things impact your health. Transportation is one of them. Like, now that we've offered this transportation to our Medicaid beneficiaries, are they more likely to be complying with doctor's orders and come in every week like they're supposed to? Some offer bus passes or reimbursement for Uber rides. More so for seniors, you'll see food delivery. To make sure that nutritious meals are provided. Personal care service in some states, if you are a family member that are the primary caregiver for a family member, you can get paid for that. That's in some states that are doing that demonstration. And the reason the government is doing these types of demonstrations is just to, again, be able to, and a lot of times it's dollars and cents, to show that it is going to be ultimately a cost savings. And sometimes I think it's hard for people to make the connection that having someone, a family member, care for you and paying them, an hourly wage, how ultimately that's going to save money for the government. It's hard sometimes for people to be able
The
to make the
people to see.
connection. But absolutely it does, because if they can show it prevents the number of falls or prevent or decrease the number of dementia diagnoses and things like that ultimately it is saving the our government money in the long run. It does seem like our current administration might be deviating from some of those things. And if they're going to cut $880 million from, that's going to be cutting a lot of staff. Along with services. And The
Excuse me.
staff is what comes up with a lot of these creative programs. We were talking about home health just before we started our conversation. Home health came from the mind of a staff person at CMS that realized this is something that could ultimately save us money and resources and be better for the patient.
That's right.
And when you start to lose legacy staff and ideas like that, that impacts the quality as well as the innovation that comes through the program.
Yes.
So far, I understand that the bill passed in the House. I think it's waiting to go through the Senate.
Yes, it is.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happened. And I read this morning that a continuing resolution was just passed. And
Yes.
again, for those of you who are watching in the future, we're in March of 2025. So we're reflecting of what's going on right now. But hopefully, by if you're in the future and you hear this, that everything is just fine and
And
our
that would be
programs are
lovely.
innovative and running and going. We're going to claim it. But
Would be lovely.
the impact is could be far-reaching and noticeable in every state. And I think there's a misconception about who Medicaid beneficiaries are. They're very diverse. They are all age ranges.
Yes.
And everyone, I think everyone could safely say they know someone personally who either has received Medicaid or currently receiving Medicaid or trying to get Medicaid. So that's the potential impact. But ultimately, and unless you have anything else in closing,
I do have one last thing in closing, and it is for you to tell us one of the biggest things. Like last time you left us with, if you're this young person and to be thinking about Medicare, thinking about it now, whatever you want to leave us with, because you said some powerful things, some things that everybody needs to pay attention to and to listen to. So you have the last word.
I think, again, speaking from what's happening in this moment, it makes a difference when they say call your legislature or your senator. It makes a difference because they hire people to literally their job is to go through every email and every letter. And what they do is they tally up, Senator Jones, you have received 3,000 calls related to the Medicaid cuts. And that has an impact. Email, call. So I would say do that. We're talking about what you can do today. For those of you thinking about in the future and your health care, I can't stress it enough, long-term care insurance, life insurance even. Also, just make sure you are aware of your health care coverage and your vulnerability level. Like if you're employed and you're getting your health insurance that way, if there's creative ways for you to think about how you can get your health insurance, I know there's communities that have come together, maybe like a county or a church, where they pool their resources to get a lower cost for health insurance. I know there's different varying models out there. So you could do some research on that and maybe create that among, if you have a large family with 60 family members and you all are connected, do some research on how you might be able to create a safety net that way. I mean, there's a lot of creative ways to think about making sure that your family's health is okay and that you have the resources available to do that. But don't delay it and just don't assume that our safety net programs are always going to be there,
Well
unfortunately.
said.
And again, this has been here since 1965, so that's what, 60 years, 50 years.
Fifty.
I can't do math right now. It's been a
It's
long
okay.
time.
It's been a long
And
time.
what's happening now, we see changes happening. But I think as a nation, we're very strong. And whatever happens, over the next few years with the budget and things like that, I do believe, I'm very optimistic that on the other end, we'll learn a lot based on whatever these changes are. And I really think what we end up with is ultimately going to be better. I believe that.
That I
So.
love it, leaving with a hope, and then I'm going to say goodbye to everyone. One thing you said about calling your legislators, there's an app called Five Calls, and it's called Five Calls, and you click that and you put in your zip code, and it will tell you who your senators are, who your congressperson is, your representative. So you and they'll even have information for you to put in there so that you can call, send an email, or where their offices are. So if you want to go there, it's called Five Call App. So with that
Okay.
said, everyone, thank you for being here. Carolyn Scott, thank you so much for what you bring to the table. And thank you so much for informing us and getting us up out of our seats to really understand about Medicaid and Medicare. We thank you so much, and we look forward to you coming back again.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you all for joining us today on Passion and Purpose. It's been wonderful to connect with you, and I hope you found our conversation as enlightening and inspiring as I have. A huge thanks to our guests who contributed to the discussion and share their experiences and insights. Your stories are the heartbeat of this podcast, and it's a joy to explore our passions and purpose together. I'm Pamela, reminding you to live with passion and purpose. Until next time, take care and keep reaching for your dreams.